So welcome to everyone to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia to the Saturday afternoon meditation session. And also welcome to the group who's doing the weekend retreat online. So that's all around the world, I imagine. So this afternoon I was just going to mention that I spoke last night about coping with fear and anxiety brought up by the coronavirus. And one of the ways that's very, very useful for us is, of course, meditation. Meditation coming into the present moment, letting go of the future where all the fears and anxiety hang out is very useful. And the more we practice it, the more we can come into the refuge of the present moment. And in that way, let go of fear and anxiety. So today, I'd like to talk about, a little bit beforehand, about the subject of the meditation, and then we can do a guided meditation from in about 45 minutes. So what I was going to mention is that meditation is often called in Sri Lanka bhavana, but in fact when the Buddha uses the word bhavana, he means cultivating and or developing. And it's very much what we're cultivating and developing in our minds. Are we cultivating and developing positive states of mind or negative states of mind? And one of the things that's very interesting is that many people don't have this idea of developing mind states, developing emotional states. They think, well, you either have it or you don't. And, you know, for instance, like loving kindness, people might think, well, you know, you either have love or you don't have love, you know, and this is how it is. But of course in Buddhism that's not the case. We have all these emotions within us, and it's just a matter of us developing them, finding the way to bring them up, to make them powerful, to enable the meditation, to reduce the hindrances, and also to benefit our lives. And one of the things that I reflect on is because people are not aware that they can develop, cultivate their minds, they are actually in some ways, or often it could be the case, actually passively developing, if you can talk about passively developing, it sounds like the opposite, developing negative states of mind. So we can see people who are getting very good at getting angry, irritable, grumpy, greedy, you know, many qualities, jealous, you know, because how do we develop them? We just repeat these things again and again. And of course, they become stronger. We become better at them. But we want to become better at good qualities. And this is what Buddha's teaching is about, developing those good qualities to support the practice and eventually to liberate the mind from being reborn again and again. And I think for the group who's doing the weekend retreat, today is the session, I think the focus is guarding and avoiding, but I'm really talking more about what you're going to talk about tomorrow, developing and maintaining, which is developing positive emotions in the mind. And so one of the things that we become aware of, how do these emotions come up in us? Well, it's fairly obvious that they're triggered by things outside of us and also the way we think. And I always like what one of my teachers said. I mentioned it last night, Ayakema. She said, don't blame the trigger. You know, especially if it's an external situation, you know, somebody that's, you know, maybe abusing us, saying things we don't want to hear, doing things we don't want them to do. Not to blame them, because we realise these qualities, these emotions that we're experiencing are coming from inside, not coming from outside. Nobody's pushing it in from outside. If we didn't have anger, if we were completely enlightened, no matter what anybody said, there would be no reaction, no negative reaction. There may be a reaction coming from compassion, from kindness, but there wouldn't be a negative reaction. So today I want to talk about, last night I was focusing on, in the meditation, on loving kindness, being our own best friend. And that's a very positive emotion we can develop, not only in the meditation, but in our daily life too. The interesting thing is with the Buddha, when he's talking about these positive qualities, he talks about developing loving kindness, metta, through our mind, through our body, and through our speech. So that's 24/7. We're looking at developing it all the time. But today I wanted to talk about mudita. Mudita. And this is, I translate it as joy with others' success or their good qualities. And it comes from a Pali word, mudu. And we have a monk called Mudu at the monastery, actually. And it means soft. And this is the sort of mind we want to develop when for meditation and also towards life, too. And it has this sense of soft-heartedness. But it really has this sense of being appreciative, taking joy in other people's successes, as I mentioned, being thankful. This is the sort of meaning that it has. And monks and nuns, when we do a blessing for when people have offered food or whatever it is, we call it the anumodana. And this comes from that word, is related to that word, mudita. And so we're just rejoicing along with, that's usually the translation for anumodana. So I would like to, we can develop joy from almost anything. If we get really good at it, we can develop joy even from difficult situations. And as I missed out last night in telling a Nasruddin story, I thought I'd incorporate one today. And this is about Nasruddin. Nasruddin was a Sufi mystic, maybe called a teacher. Ajahn Brahm would definitely say a scallywag. And he's a bit like a Zen person, really, the way he taught, as it were. But on one occasion, Nasruddin had a donkey that was, actually this donkey was very important in his life. It's a bit like a car in people's lives these days. But this donkey was also Nasruddin's friend, and he was also his transport. And it was also the transport not only for himself, but for taking things to market. And one day, Nasruddin's donkey disappeared. And he looked everywhere, and he couldn't find this donkey. He looked as far as he could. And the villagers, they came and helped. They looked for the donkey, and they couldn't find the donkey. And they came and told Nasruddin, the donkey's gone, the donkey's lost. And they thought Nasruddin would be completely destroyed, you know, completely upset. But that night, when they were in their homes, they heard these loud exclamations of, thank you, thank you, thank you. And they knew it was Nasruddin. They came out of their houses and they said, Nasruddin, what's wrong with you? Have you gone mad from grief? No. He said, no, no, no. He said, I'm so thankful I wasn't on the donkey when it got lost, when it disappeared. Now that's finding joy in the most difficult situation, isn't it? I don't think I could do that one. That's really the power of the positive mind. And so we don't often hear teachings about mudita. One of the reasons I wish to do it here was because I heard a teaching here in the early 2000s by Ajahn Yanadhammo, who some people will remember. He's in Thailand now. And I remember that teaching was very effective and very, very helpful, because I find taking joy in people's good qualities is something that gives me a lot of energy, and it also gives me a role model of how to develop that particular quality. So I've always found that meditation that Ajahn Yanadhammo taught very, very helpful. And of course, at this time, you know, whatever positive qualities we can bring up in the mind, whatever positive emotions is going, inner emotions that we can bring up, this is going to be a real antidote to the fear and anxiety I talked about last night, the difficulties that we're experiencing with the coronavirus. And so this is a way of bringing that happiness to the mind. And this inner happiness is a real, it's almost like a food for us, actually. We need that inner happiness in order to have this balance in the mind. If we don't have inner happiness, the Buddha says this, we'll go for outer happiness through hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting and touching. And many people will be going to the internet, not to practice meditation, but to watch Netflix and these sorts of things. So we'll be looking for distractions, looking for happiness from the senses. So it's a useful meditation, but the main function of mudita meditation is to overcome any jealousy and envy. And jealousy and envy, we can see it when other people have success. Often we may think, what about me? Why shouldn't I get this? You know, why did they get that promotion? Why did they get that praise? Etc. Instead of thinking, oh, isn't that great? Isn't that really good that they had this success in this life, or they've got this very good quality in their life? So that's often the way we can react. And sometimes we even find what I call reverse mudita. People take joy in other people's difficulties, maybe thinking, well, at least my life's not that bad. Things are not that bad in my life. So this is what I call reverse mudita. But one of the main functions of mudita is really, I call it piggybacking. That's for people who don't speak, who are watching this, whose English isn't their first language. It means like you latch on to, as it were, or you attach to someone else's happiness from their success or from their good qualities. So we are, as it were, riding in the slipstream of somebody else's success or in the slipstream of their good qualities. And this makes it very easy for us to develop happiness, joy, what the Buddha calls piti sukha, and this joy and happiness, which is part of the meditation. And when we do this, one of the purposes of it is to let go of these negative qualities in the mind, the hindrances, which block the meditation, which block insight and wisdom. So when we develop this mudita for the good qualities of other people, it reminds me of the, and I find this very, very good in my for my practice, for my life, is these motivational speakers. Some of them very inspiring because of the difficulties they've had to overcome, so the good qualities, the strengths they've had to develop, really. And, you know, I think particularly of Janine Shepherd. I've seen her videos about coping with having broken the back, the spine, in six places as a young person, overcoming that and actually eventually walking and even flying an aeroplane. But there are many others. So we are actually focusing, when we focus on these good qualities, they become like what we call in Buddhism a kalyanamitta, a spiritual, what I call a spiritual friend. Because their qualities, with this quality we can see in them, we can see how we can develop it. So for me, you know, in Sri Lanka, I see some of the people, the lay supporters, incredibly generous and kind, you know. And for me, that actually encourages me to develop this generosity. And of course, you know, for me, with Ajahn Brahm as my teacher, I think of him in these many of the qualities he has, you know, his naturalness, his wisdom, his kindness, and of course, is humour. And these days, I forgot to mention it last night, but humour is a very, very good antidote to anxiety and fear. It breaks through the mindset that is so rigid and moves us on. So these, when we develop mudita, we can, as it were, develop these qualities. We can focus and get happiness from the qualities these people have or the success they've had, and then develop it ourselves. They become a role model. So now is time to start the meditation, and I think we have, 45 minutes, that's right. Good, good. So we're on time. That's amazing. So if you would all like to, first of all, find the comfortable position for the body, and to close the eyes so we can get more in contact with the body and making ourselves comfortable. And coming into the present moment, just to be here and now, in what I call the oasis, the safety zone from the past and the future. And really the only time we have. Past and future are projection. As Ajahn Brahm says, past is the history and the future is a mystery. And we come into contact with the body and notice how the feet, the legs positioned, adjusting the hips if we need to balance them, sitting either on a chair, cushion, or however we find ourselves, what's most comfortable for the meditation. Becoming aware of the spine and the position of the spine so that it's erect, but not very tight, tense. And noticing the shoulders, moving the shoulders if we need to balance them over the hips. Paying attention to the arms and the hands. And the hands can be in the most comfortable position, either on the knees, I often use for stability, or on the lap. And then focusing on the neck and the head, seeing if it's balanced, the head's balanced over the shoulders, over the hips. And if we find it useful, we can tuck the chin in a little bit to give the spine that extra stretch. And now we can mentally relax the body. This is very important. Starting at the top of the head, including the back of the head and the sides of the head, like a mental massage, soothing, relaxing any tension, sore areas, any hard areas. Relaxing top of the head. And moving the attention down to the forehead and soothing, giving this warm, relaxing attention to the forehead. And moving down the face to the cheeks and around the eyes, giving them a good massage around the eyes, a mental massage. And moving our attention down to the chin and the mouth, and soothing, relaxing any tension, any tightness. And now bringing to mind the neck and moving our attention down the neck, all around the neck, giving it this soothing mental massage. And now bringing to mind the right shoulder, starting at the neck, and moving along the right shoulder with this warm, kind, relaxing attention, area by area along the right shoulder. And bringing to mind the right arm, starting at the top of the right arm, and we can move our attention slowly down, taking in, including the elbow, the wrist, the hands and the fingers, with a soothing mental massage. Now bringing to mind the left shoulder, starting at the neck and moving along the left shoulder with this warm, kind, relaxing attention. Now bringing to mind the left arm, starting at the top of the left arm, we can slowly move our attention down the left arm to include the elbow, wrist, hand and fingers with this kind, warm attention. Bringing to mind the back, starting just below the shoulders and moving our attention slowly down the back, right down to the buttocks, with this warm, soothing mental massage. And now we can bring to mind the front of the body, starting just below the chest, just below the shoulders, and moving our attention slowly down the front of the body to include the chest, diaphragm, stomach and abdomen, soothing it, relaxing any tense areas, any areas where there's pressure, or that are sore. And now we can bring to mind the right leg, starting at the top of the right leg, and slowly moving our attention all around the right leg, taking in the knee, ankle, foot and toes, soothing it with this warm, kind attention. Now bringing to mind the left leg, starting at the top of the left leg and moving our attention slowly down the left leg or around it to include the knee, the ankle, the left foot and the toes, soothing them, mentally massaging them. Now bringing to mind the whole body, just sitting here, relaxed, soothed, massaged, experiencing whatever we are aware of at the present moment. And we can bring to mind an intention for this meditation to develop this joy, mudita, with somebody's good qualities. It may be a teacher we know, a spiritual teacher, a parent, grandparent, a friend, whoever we bring comes to mind, some good quality that we really appreciate. And as we do this, we can notice or get in contact with the feeling that arises when we focus, when we remember this good quality. It might be joy, it might be thanks, appreciation, or even inspiration. The feeling that comes when we focus on this good quality of this person that comes to mind. And we get into contact with that feeling. And we can fill ourselves with this feeling, this joy or thanks, appreciation or inspiration fill ourselves from head to toe, fill the body and fill the mind. And bathe any negative states of mind there might be with this joy, this thanks, this appreciation. Filling every part of ourselves with this joy and this good quality. And we can become aware of the breath. As we breathe in, we can breathe in this joy. And as we breathe out, we can breathe out this joy to the world. And if we wish, if you wish, we can use a mantra like sadhu, well done it means, or in English, maybe wonderful or marvelous. A more recent one, awesome, as we breathe in and breathe out this joy. And if this feeling of joy, thankfulness, whatever it is, reduces, we can bring to mind that quality that we originally brought out this feeling. And now we can bring to mind this joy or this appreciation, thanks, and share it, radiate it to everyone who is listening, watching this live streaming, giving them this gift of joy. Wishing that their minds may be uplifted. And now radiating, sharing this joy with all those beings, human beings, animals, dogs, cats, insects, reptiles, whatever, in the area around us. And then expanding to include the whole of the earth, to all realms of existence. Radiating this joy, this thankfulness, appreciation, inspiration. Wishing that all beings may be filled with this positive emotion, this happiness. Now bringing the focus back to ourselves, bringing the joy back into our own hearts, and developing the aspiration, the intention to pay more attention to the good qualities of others and ourselves, and to develop more and more on this feeling of joy that arises from paying attention to these good qualities and to share this joy with others. and to bring this joy into our speech, into our actions, as a gift to others through our actions and speech. And we can anchor this feeling of joy at the good qualities or the successes of others in our hearts. And now, as we're coming towards the end of the meditation, we can just reflect for a few moments on how we feel now. Is it different from when before we started the meditation? Were we able to get in touch with this joy or appreciation, thanks, arising from the good qualities of others? And did we notice this feeling, whatever that feeling is of joy or appreciation, change? Did it arise, remain for a time and pass away? Did it come and go? And we can ask ourselves, what caused these feelings to arise? What triggered them? We can also ask ourselves, was there any difference in the feeling when I had that joy within myself and when I shared it with others? Was there any difference? And lastly, just to reflect on who or what experienced this joy. Was it me making it happen? Or was it just these qualities arising, this quality, this feeling arising from causes and conditions? Now, we can slowly come out of the meditation, slowly open our eyes and move our bodies to make ourselves more comfortable. So now is the time for questions. Thanks. Good. Good questions. Right. So the first question is from New Zealand. Are there different degrees of awareness? Yes, for sure, you know, because we can, you can see that in our life, you know, that sometimes the awareness or mindfulness can be fairly superficial. It can be focused on different things and can vary in intensity. And we notice that's one of the functions of samadhi. You notice that this mindfulness changing, intensifying, becoming stiller and stiller. And this is what really samadhi is mindfulness becoming still, becoming one-pointed. So yes, there's many different degrees of awareness. And there are many different objects we can use for awareness. It's very interesting that the Buddha talks about in the Metta Sutta that metta is a quality of mindfulness that we should keep in mind, metta. So many things, and when we keep sila, keep ethical behavior, morality, the five precepts, we need that mindfulness, that awareness. But the most important awareness is actually to be aware of our minds, what's going on in our minds. That is very important. Does moving from superficial to deeper awareness occur as meditation develops? And I think I've covered that actually. Yes, of course, because that's the process of the meditation aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path, and this is right effort. So we are avoiding letting go of negative states of mind, developing and maintaining positive states of mind. So this is reducing, removing the hindrances, albeit temporarily, and then the mindfulness can grow because the hindrances are not there. It grows, becomes stiller, and as I said, stiller until it becomes one-pointed. And when that develops, of course, you know, as you go towards that, the landmarks of that happening, you know, we see is this energy, this rapture in the mind, this joy in the mind. And then, of course, the Buddha says, then this tranquility, this sort of peace in the body and the mind, and then this happiness developing. And these, and then from that happiness, this samadhi or one-pointedness, or stillness develops. So definitely it's growing and it's developing. But even in our everyday life we see that. We see how the awareness can be really scattered all over the place. Almost we feel like non-existent. And at other times it can be really quite, we can be really aware. We can hear the sounds of the birds. We can notice the sound of the wind in the trees, the moving of the trees. And that awareness, and you just notice that the awareness varies all the time. But we can develop that more and more by giving attention to this mindfulness in this present moment, whatever is in the present moment. All right, and now a question from Barcelona. I hope things are okay in Barcelona. That's one of the things with this meditation this afternoon, that you know, we think of the coronavirus, and there's a lot of very difficult times people experiencing. So this joy, this energy is something that we need, as I say, like a food in the mind. And there's a question from Barcelona, is there any mantra from the suttas you recommend to use during meditation? Is there any mantra from the suttas you recommend to use during meditation? In a way, I mean, you know, sadhu is one of the, it's a Pali word, sadhu just means well done. Or, you know, maybe in English we could say bravo or something like that. Maybe something of that that nature. The Buddha doesn't really have, you know, mantras like that. But in a sense, you know, you often see in the suttas, the Buddha says, we should train ourselves like this. You know, for instance, last night I mentioned the advice he gave to Nakalapita, a very old person who was often sick, And he said, you know, that even though your body may be sick, do not let your mind be sick, and to make this a training. So when I hear that, it's like the Buddha is suggesting, use this for mindfulness. Even though my body may be sick, do not let my mind be sick. And that is sort of a mantra in a way, because for that advice to really be useful, we have to bring it to mind. And so you could say that they were mantras, but not mantras like I was using, because generally, if we're developing peaceful states of mind, we want something very simple. We don't want to make it too complicated. But certainly, you know, these advices, these trainings the Buddha gave, can be used for mindfulness and to be remembered, to keep in mind. So thank you. I hope that answers a question from Barcelona. And the next question is from Perth. All right. And it says, are people still allowed to come to Bodhinyana? At the moment, they're, of course, because of the coronavirus, we have to reduce the number of people that are coming to offer food. And unfortunately, people, for instance, they can't come into the buildings at the moment. But what we are doing is a few people come each day and then they bring their food and we have a table outside the dining hall and they put the food into the monastery bowls or pots, and then there's a monk there to give a blessing for their kindness, driving all that way, 60 kilometres from Perth, and to speak to them for a short time. And then they go home or go away after that. So there are some people coming, but of course we don't want to encourage too many people. This is, of course, part of the government's direction to reduce people gathering together. And we do this outside the buildings in order to comply with that as well. So it's more in the sense of people, because the places of religion have been asked to close and to not to be doing ceremonies, any of these sorts of things. So this is like people bringing, delivering food and receiving a blessing or a thank you. An anumodana, that's what I mentioned during the talk at anumodana. So that is happening still, and that's good, because when we give, it brings happiness to the mind, and that's part of, this is why dana is important in Buddha's teaching. It's something that is really, really ingrained in Buddhist countries. I see it. It's just almost in the blood. And you know, I often think, because people often reborn again and again, we are, you know, probably in a similar situation, say in a Buddhist country again and again. This instinct to give, this instinct for towards dana is really deep. It's a very, very deep conditioning. But a very good conditioning. But we shouldn't restrict it to just giving and sharing with monks and nuns, the Sangha as we call it. But all the giving and sharing we do physically, materially I mean, and also there's non-material way, you know, the kind words we say, you know, the listening to people, the advice, the humour we think about Ajahn Brahm. These are all gifts. And actually, in actual fact, I often teach, you know, that we need to develop that perception of giving much, much more, because we are, all of us, you know, parents are giving to their children, they're giving time, they're giving all this love, this kindness, hopefully, you know, all this nourishment, they're looking after them physically, emotionally, so on. So there's many aspects of our lives where we're giving, but many people will think, well, this is what a parent has to do, or a mother or father has to do, that's just it. And I think that's a shame in a way, because they could develop a lot more happiness from that giving if they realized or thought of it, perceived it as a gift, as something they're giving. Of course, when we do things day in, day out, it's very hard to keep that perception going. But to use that as much as possible, because that is that's why it's a very important aspect of the Buddhist path too, because it brings that happiness into the mind. And happiness, not suffering, is actually a condition for the arising of samadhi, stillness, one-pointedness as we call it. So it's a very important thing that we develop the mind in these positive states, as I say. And in a sense, you know, making it a real treasure, a treasure trove, I call it. In Sri Lanka, many people, they have this focus on nidana. Nidana are treasures, usually associated with the old Buddhist temples, because, you know, monasteries, temples, and in difficult times, you know, gold and jewelry and gems were hidden in different places and so on in these monasteries when they were, you know, when there were invasions from India particularly. And so people are always, you know, interested in nidana, this treasure hunting. But I think the biggest treasure is the mind, making the mind this treasure, making the mind this treasure trove. And this is what the Buddha's teaching is about, because it is from these, developing these positive qualities, this is for the people on the retreat, that we can guard and avoid negative qualities. Because as I often say, if there are positive emotions in the mind, there's less space for the negative ones to arise. And particularly when we're practicing and we're seeing that, you know, what others do and say are just triggers coming from their conditioning, you know, where they're at. You know, it may have very, very little to do with us actually, with the object of their words and their actions. But in actual fact, when we actually see things, see others, see ourselves as being conditioned by all our experiences that we've had from the past, all the influences in our lives up to that point, we realise our actions conform to all that conditioning. They can't be otherwise. And that's what I often think when I see people that have been, you know, I feel are difficult to deal with. I think they couldn't be any other way than this at the moment. That's it, you know. And also when you feel that, when you see that, then one can have a lot of compassion for people. You think that, you know, we're all, as it were, in a sense, limited or trapped by our conditioning. But it's the Buddha's teaching that is showing us that there's a way to freedom beyond these perceptions, these limitations. And so that's what we endeavour to do. So I hope that everyone finds something in this guided meditation on mudita that is useful. And as I say, not only for the cushion, take it into our daily life. Because I say the cushion is like the practice, you know, when we practice sports or whatever it is, or even music. It's really, the purpose of the practice is to take it into the game, the performance, whatever it's for, from into life. And that's where we really see is if we have developed that quality. You know, when we're sitting on the cushion, metta, mudita, karuna, this is compassion, may be easy to develop. But when we're out there, when people are saying things, doing things, we're in the workplace and things are pretty busy, if we can bring some of these qualities, then that is even, that's a test, as it were, but it strengthens, it keeps that mindfulness going, and we can develop it even further. So I'd like to finish there and wish everybody well, and also may, you know, this mudita help, this joy that we've been developing, help the world in its present state with all this coronavirus fear. As I've said to people last night, there's two types of coronavirus. One's in the body, and one's in the mind. So may our minds not be filled with the coronavirus, the fear, the anxiety, panic. May our minds be filled with this mudita, with metta, with kindness, with compassion. So sadhu. See, there again, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you very much.